This morning in the first hour, we have one of our regular guests, one of the folks that shows up here every month to talk with you. And the guest today is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the program here once a month. It's always on a Monday, and we talk about home maintenance. So if you got a problem, something needs to be fixed, you're not quite sure how to approach that, you're thinking about making some changes, doing some remodeling, anything like that, you're certainly welcome here to call in and talk with Hank, and he will do his best to help you out. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. Well, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you. Good to be back.
Let's start here. We got a letter from somebody who had some questions about shake shingles, something that, certainly periodically on the program, we talk about roofing, and we talk about the various merits and advantages of different kinds. And this listener specifically had some questions about shake. So why don't you go ahead and see if you can respond to the letter.
That was because of a comment I made a couple months ago that the durability of shake shingles was greatly increased by painting the ends of the shingles while they were still in the bundle. Just taking a long nap roller and rolling a coat of paint on the ends of the bundle, because it keeps the moisture from going into the ends of the shingles by capillary attraction. Now, this was not the result of any scientific study. It was pure serendipity. We, sometime years ago in this town, had some lady who didn't like the looks of the new shake shingles she put on, so she wanted the ends painted to look like they had moss on them. Well, this was done. The interesting thing was the shingles lasted about twice as long as we expected them to, primarily because we did stop this capillary attraction of water into the ends of the shingles. The letter that I have says that they understood that cedar shingles can be pressure treated with CCA, chromated copper arsenate. Well, I doubt that, because a CCA treatment has almost been entirely removed from the spectrum because of concerns about the arsenic. I think they were grossly overblown, but at any rate, CCA is not currently being used for pressure treating. However, those shingles can contain some sapwood, and one of the advantages of the split cedar shakes is that they are all hardwood, which does have decay resistance ability. So I would still suggest that the durability of split shakes, or for that matter even sawn shingles, but this, we don't expect sawn shingles to last quite as long, that they be painted with an oil-based paint while they're still in the bundle. Very simple process, and this tends to increase the life significantly. This, as I say, this is not the result of any tests. It was serendipity more than anything else, but it does seem to work.
Okay. Well, I hope that that gets at the question of the caller. We have others. In fact, the lines are full, and we'll get right to it here, and we will start out with someone in Savoy. Line number one. Hello.
Yeah. The house was built in 1979, and currently it has blown cellulose insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a question about it in terms of the dampness, and it was suggested that maybe it should be taken out and fiberglass put in.
I wouldn't touch it.
Okay. It doesn't build up in terms of moisture at all then?
No. If you have an attic ventilation problem, you can get condensation in fiberglass just like you do in cellulose. But I certainly would not, as long as there's no other signs of a moisture problem in the attic, I would not touch it.
Okay, but it doesn't also clump up or not?
No, not particularly. As I say, as long as there's not a moisture problem in the attic. Now, we do have, if you look at the bottom of the roof sheathing, are there moisture spots around the ends of nails that are sticking through it?
Okay.
If there are no such spots, or if you go up there on some zero day and there is no frost, no drops of water hanging from the nail ends and so on, you don't have any problem.
On the other hand, could it be If it needed additional insulation, what would you put, to bring the R factor up?
It could be either fiberglass or cellulose. It doesn't make much difference.
Okay. I also make the assumption that BAT was used for the walls. I would assume it wouldn't be blown in. What if it was built?
Probably it was BAT type, yes.
Okay. Would that be cellulose or would it, at that time? Or would that?
It could have been either. Both were on the market.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's go to Lafayette for the next caller. Line number 4. Our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. I suppose with those shingles, a person might well prefer a clear oil rather than something that added a color to the edges.
Well, I think the color was picked to match about what they were going to weather to.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's no reason why a clear wouldn't work.
Okay. Is relative humidity in the 40s a reasonable expectation for the house in summer?
It's going to take some dehumidification or air conditioning to do it, but yes.
Okay. Well, I've got it. Main question. I hope maybe you can answer this. The directions for my electric lawnmower warn against using it when the grass is damp. Now, can you say or speculate why? Is it damp? Is it dangerous to me? Remember, both plug ends are dry, well above the grass, or is it somehow damaging to the motor?
I would guess that this is one of those warnings that's put on. Just some lawyer put it on on general principles. I don't think it has any basis in fact.
Okay.
As long as we are using a grounded plugs and grounded wires, and the chassis of the mower should be hooked to the ground, it's not a problem. But it's the same way that some of this disclaimers that we find on consumer products that are hung in there by the lawyers, you can't believe that anybody would be stupid enough to do any of them.
So. Well, you don't suppose then that there's somehow a damage of moisture to the motor?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
I do not.
All right, thank you. Let's go on here, and our next caller is in Piatt County, and line number 2. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Hi. A while back I heard you talk on the show about putting plastic down into crawl spaces, and
yes,
you suggested a 4-millimeter thickness. I finally went out to the store to start looking for this stuff, and the guy wanted to sell me a 6-millimeter. I was wondering, is there any particular benefit that's gained?
It's just less likely to tear if you get down there doing some work.
Okay, and then do you have to anchor it in any way, or can you?
No,
just lay
generally
it out?
Speaking, we just lay it out. We lap the any joints in it about 6 to 8 inches,
okay,
and let it roll up a few inches onto the walls.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks. And I know from having had this conversation before, you say that you don't have to tape up the sides.
No, we don't. If it falls back off the wall, that just means that any moisture that comes through the wall will go under the plastic, not on top of it.
Okay.
And that's what we're trying to avoid.
But there should be enough so that you could lap it up the sides,
yeah,
so make sure that
inches,
all
right,
of the dirt, all
we
of the
want,
surface dirt is covered.
100% coverage.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to next caller in Mattoon, and that's line number 3.
Good morning.
Yes.
Mr. Spies?
Yes.
I need your advice on rebut on something you said a while back that was just really opened my eyes up, and I've been working on buildings for the last 40 years and at different levels and stuff. It had to do with, it's another crawl space thing, it had to do with, you tell, I'm having a real hard time selling it, is my problem. It had to do with closing, keeping the foundation vents closed on the house, and you proposed that that's a good deal, but I really have a hard time selling it to my customers, and I believe it, you know. And
if your crawl space is dry, and you're not getting any moisture soaking through the walls, there's no reason to leave them open.
Well, boy, do you know what I could use as in rebut, you know, I mean, an argument? I have people almost throw things at me when I tell them that. And I'm really unhappy because as long as I can remember, nobody has ever invented a good foundation shutter vent. You know,
That's true. Well, the real thing is you happen to think, generally speaking, you have ductwork down there. If you have central air conditioning, that ductwork is cold.
Yes.
The moisture comes in as water vapor through those vents and condenses on the ductwork.
Yes. Yeah, that is, if it's not insulated ductwork.
Right, and 90% of it is not.
Oh, you're right, because it's a lot cheaper, and it's not that too terribly much loss, I suppose. But now...
Well, you see, you have the other option. If you don't insulate it in the wintertime, the heat loss tends to keep the crawl space at 55 degrees or so, which is a lot warmer floors than you get by insulating the ductwork.
Oh, yeah, it's much more comfortable. But now, listen, I have a friend of mine that's in the insulation business, and he blows on cellulose insulation on the inside of the foundation. And I wonder if that's a termite detriment.
It could, among other things.
But you can't see it.
That's right, because the termites can go up through it, and you can't tell that they're there.
God. I suspected that, but I didn't know. But I tell you, it really improves a brick foundation.
Oh, yes, it does.
And
it doesn't make any difference whether it's cellulose or fiberglass or whatever.
You mentioned just a while ago, of course, it's roughly true, but I think fiberglass insulation is less subject to deterioration because of the cellulose breaks down, you know, like a newspaper. It gets brittler over the years and things like that.
Yeah. We haven't had much problem with that.
I have. I've seen what it looks like after 25 or 30 years.
Yeah.
Not in the wall cavities particularly, although I think it all settles some because of lightning or thunder rather and stuff. But the it crusts up. Wait a minute. Now, I take it back. That's a house that had vent ridge that I'm thinking about, and it gets a little bit of fine snow in there.
Yeah, maybe, that will cause it to crust.
Yeah, well, I think it's good. I mean, it's
yeah. Well, okay. I'm not having any problem with it.
Well, but you don't really know of a good argument. I mean, well, no, your argument is good, but I was trying to think of something sharp that I could come back and say if you don't have a moisture problem under there, instead of this fall and spring deal of opening and shutting them vents and taking the insulation board out of the hole because the vents don't really do much.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. I think I'll try. I think the ones that don't argue with me, I'll do it. And the ones that...
They may as well pay you for putting the stuff in and out.
Well, I guess that's about the size of it. I thank you a lot. Incidentally, I've heard many things that's helped me because it's you're obviously very in-depth on your knowledge of structure. And I appreciate it. And I've been working on, I'm 62 years old, and I've been messing with buildings for over 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you for showing up every month.
All right.
Okay,
well,
thanks
for the call. We appreciate it. We are talking this morning in this part of Focus 580 with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. And he has been doing this show with us for a long time, once a month, to talk about home maintenance. And if you have a question, call us, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Up next, we've got a caller here, line number one, Bourbonnais, I think. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I, too, thank Mr. Spies for showing up every month. I live in an old dirt cottage in Bourbonnais on the river with a dirt-floored basement. And the recent heat and humidity and the fact that the basement is segmented led me to the conclusion that I need another dehumidifier. So I'm calling to ask what criteria I should look for, what I could expect to pay for a good one, et cetera.
Well, I would start by putting a layer of heavy plastic down over the dirt floor.
Okay, that's been done in some segments, and the others it's pretty difficult to do. Well, very very low and so forth, and it's uneven.
Yeah, I realize that it can be very difficult to do, but that's really the starting point. All right. Dehumidifiers, it doesn't make much difference. They all work well. They all work on a refrigeration principle. And main thing is, all right, where does the water go that it takes out? And we want to be sure that that doesn't just soak into the ground because it's going to come right back again.
Right. They all seem to come with an adapter to run a hose off of them, and I run mine into the sump.
Okay, that works fine. That works fine. But among other things, I would extend the plastic over the sump so the water that's in the sump can't evaporate back.
Yeah, I've been meaning to do that.
But I don't know of any rating of efficiency on dehumidifiers. They all work on the same principle, and so it doesn't seem to make much difference. I haven't noticed any significant difference in brands.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All
okay.
right. Thanks for the call. Let's
thank
go
you.
Line two, Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question that may be on the periphery of your charge here. I was wondering if you've had anybody who's had problems with their house because they used wood mulch from the city recycling center over here, the garden recycling center.
No, I can't say that I've run into any problems with it, but basically it's a matter of maintaining the grade, the slope away from the foundation. Of course, it does tend to build up next to the house, which is good. We want it built up next to the foundation. We could have concealed insect infestations, but I haven't noticed much of anything of that. Generally speaking, if you've treated for termites or something like that, that pretty well takes care of it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Just this raises actually a different sort of question, a foundation question, and I was thinking about this the other day. It's something that we've talked about in the past. When you go through periods when it's extremely dry, if you're looking at drought conditions,
right.
What you want to do is make sure that you actually water the dirt around the house, around the foundation.
That's right. We don't want it to shrink away from the foundation and leave this crack next to the foundation, because then what happens is dirt blows into it, falls into it, whatever, and then when it starts raining again, everything expands and pushes the foundation in.
And you've actually seen foundations pushed in by this action?
Yes.
Okay.
We had a lot of this in 1988, which is the worst drought we've had in many years in Champaign-Urbana, and yes, it pushed in foundations all over the place. Particularly when some misguided soul sees this crack there and then fills the crack with sand.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the other soil expands again, it's going to push in the width of the crack. And it will cause concrete block foundation walls to crack that way.
Okay, so if you haven't thought about that, or particularly if you're in those places where it has been really dry, continues to be really dry, at the very least, you just want to take care of that and make sure that the soil right around the foundation stays.
Yeah. Water the flowers around the house.
Yeah. That's right. So that's one of the reasons that one of the arguments for foundation plantings, because then you're going to want to water them and you want to keep that dirt from shrinking away from the house.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go on here. Let's go to line three. This is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question about replacing a central air conditioning unit in my house. The house was built in 1922 as a duplex, and we've owned it for 30 years. We live in the first floor unit. There's a second floor unit, and the air conditioner was old when we bought the house 30 years ago. We got?
Well, the appropriate thing to do with it is throw it away.
Okay. So we got estimates from two reliable firms in town, and they're wildly different. One is using the old, I'll use sort of a generic term, Freon, but it's not called Freon, but anyway, the old kind of gas that's not environmentally friendly, and the other is using the new environmentally friendly gas, Puron or Environ. So I wondered what you thought about that, because it makes a big difference in the cost.
Well, I can't say that it makes a difference in performance. What we really want to look at is the SEER rating of the air conditioner. That stands for seasonal energy efficiency ratio. And basically that number is BTUs of cooling per watt of electricity. Now, we have improved the efficiency of air conditioners by a factor of 2 in the last 10 years. Right now, the new one you buy today with an SEER of 12 is twice as efficient as the one from 10 years ago, which usually had an SEER of about 6. Now, the environmentalists get very violent about this thing, and eventually I think we will go to some variation on Freon 12 or 22, but no standard has been established. No one of the substitutes for it has been blessed with a complete approval. You just can't mix them. So that whoever puts it in the first time, you're going to have to put in exactly the same stuff for maintenance. You cannot mix the refrigerants.
Okay, but will they continue to make the old stuff after, you know, in 5 years?
Well, it's been a lot longer than that since they came out with these others, and they're still making it. But in all probability, the environmentalists are going to work hard to keep them from making it. But as I say, I can't pick any one of the substitutes for it that's going to guarantee to be around any longer.
Okay.
So really, the reliability of the company that puts it in, the person who's going to service it, and the SEER are what I would consider.
And the size.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Let's go to line one. Someone here calling from the campus. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
We are in the process of preparing a home for sale, and the previous occupant was a heavy smoker, and how do you get rid of that? Is it, you know, do you call in, like, Service Master, and can they work wonders, or?
Well, generally speaking, you paint everything because you've got a coating of tar on everything in the house.
Uh-huh.
The last one of these houses I picked up, the first coat of paint did nothing but to bind the tar. The second one changed the color. This entire house looked like it was beige on the inside, and it really wasn't to begin with. You're probably going to have to replace carpet and padding. I doubt very much that you're going to get the smoke smell out of that.
Okay.
Otherwise, scrub it, paint what is necessary. That's about the best you can do.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, let's go to line number 4 in Bradley. This caller's in Bradley. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, gentlemen, for this program.
Sure.
We live in a house that's a little over 25 years old. It's a bi-level, and we seem to have an enormous problem with dust. And we've tried several things. We installed one of those expensive air filters in the furnace, which seems to only get dirty around the edges. But my current question is the return air grills on the wall. Several years ago, a friend of mine came up with some bulk furnace filter material, and I talked him out of a couple of pieces, and I put that material behind those grills. And I decided it was time to check it the other day, and I pulled the grills out of the wall, and sure enough, the front of them was pretty dirty from slightly large pieces of lint and all that stuff. And when I took it out of the wall and looked at it, I was very surprised to find that the backside was also dirty, but with fine material. And I wonder if I have a clue there to my dusty house, but I don't know how to read it. Can you help?
Well, basically, they did what they were intended to do, and that is they filtered out a lot of it. That probably is why your furnace filters haven't clogged up as much, basically because it's ended up in those filters instead. So you really have a two-stage filtering system.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, why was the backside of that filter dirty?
Oh, well, you picked up the big stuff on the front, but as the velocity drops, the smaller particles will drop out, and so that would be perfectly normal.
But the fine material on the backside of the filter, what carried that into the filter?
Well, the air that's moving through it.
Oh, you mean it came through from the front side?
Yes.
And just hung up on the back?
Right.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, that's all I want to know. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Generally, I think that you may have a real serious problem and that might help, but generally I think that it's not recommended for you to put filters in the air returns. Isn't that right?
Not usually, no. Generally speaking, we put it in the furnace or somewhere near the furnace. And he said his other filter didn't get very dirty. Well, that's why he was picking it up out there. The efficiency of the heating system may have dropped because the airflow was restricted. But we usually do it just so we have only one set of filters to change instead of one for every return air register.
Yeah. Okay. Our guest this morning is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. We're here with this topic every month. It's always on a Monday. And if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Champaign, and this is line number two.
Hello? Hi, yeah. My name is Manju Rao. I have a question regarding the telephone wiring inside the house. 2 weeks ago, when there were severe thunderstorms, the phone line stopped working, and I called in SBC, and one of the servicemen, he came and he checked from outside. And his opinion was that nothing was wrong outside of my house in the SBC line. And he said there is some hard short inside the house. So what are my options in detecting where it is and fixing it?
Well, I would call in one of the telephone companies, the people who do this kind of service, and they can check for you. Unless you are experienced with working with it, it may be very difficult to find.
Okay.
So the wiring within the house is your responsibility. The phone company is responsible up to the box on the house.
Right.
So it takes a certain amount of electrical instrumentation to find the short. I'm sure that they can, but unless you're experienced at doing it, you're probably better off getting someone who is to work on it.
All right, thank you.
All right, and Matt, next, line four. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have another furnace filter question, although of a slightly different nature. Some years ago, we had a furnace put in, and what the installer did was, on top of the furnace, built a box out of insulation, reinforced insulation, to make the housing for the furnace filters, mm-hmm. and put in a heavy kind of green mesh that was washable and cleanable. So for quite a while, instead of worrying about replacing them, I would just clean them. Well, over the years, that material has thinned out and they're not very effective. I went to get replacement filters and found out that apparently this is a very odd size. It's like a 16 by 18 filter. It's in a galvanized frame. I'm beginning to wonder if they didn't just fabricate those themselves and put them in, and now I'm at a loss as to how I can get replacement filters or even replacement material for the filter frames that do fit.
Can you put it in enough of a slant so you can get a 16 by 20?
No, and I tried to turn it so I could put in and possibly get an 18 by 18 because that would have worked, but the opening they have to move through is not high enough to get into the box. It slides in through the furnace and then lifts up, and that opening's no more than 16 inches.
Okay, well, the only thing that I've ever been able to do is to use the slightly smaller one and block the edges so that the air couldn't bypass the filter.
Okay, so what size would you suggest then, like a 16? Do they make a 16 by 16?
Don't know. I've never looked for one in that size.
Okay.
They say 16 by 20 is a standard.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, I've never looked for that size. They probably make a 14 by 16, if nothing else.
Okay. Do you know where I might be able to get material to replace that in the and just use the same frames?
This is a metal mesh.
No, it's like a almost like a really stiff spun fiberglass feeling mesh.
Okay. I would say any of the heating wholesalers should have it by the running foot.
All righty. Thank you for your help.
All right. Very good. Next caller here is Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my question has to do with the purchase of a new furnace. And I'm considering buying a two-stage burner with a furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there's options of constant speed or variable speed. And I was wondering what are the advantages of the variable speed. And when you get a constant speed, doesn't the furnace change speeds when the second stage clicks in? Or is that not
well, it all depends upon the brand that you have.
Uh-huh.
And generally speaking, the multiple speeds will provide a little bit more comfort in that you will have a higher speed when there's a greater temperature difference and so on. And it reduces the draft when there's very little heating or cooling to take place. So that generally speaking, the comfort does improve with the variable speed units.
What about, is there any saving in electricity because the motor's running at a different speed?
Or some.
Some. What does that mean? Does it mean like...
Probably less than 10%.
Less than 10%, so just a few dollars an hour or something.
Right.
A month or so, yeah. So. Okay. So the primary advantage of the multiple speed is simply the comfort.
Right.
There's no significant... savings in terms of gas and usage and...
Yeah, because generally speaking, it will run at a lower level for a longer period of time, and that will produce better comfort conditions.
Right. So. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Next caller is in Lovington, line 1. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've got a heat pump, and the copper tubing that comes in from the outside unit in the winter burns off the insulation. In the summer, condensation runs down in off of it into my control panel. And I've had a couple different things on there. They originally had it wrapped with some kind of a stuff that melted off, and then I put a plastic sleeve over on it, and that melted off, and in the wintertime, and I just wondered if you had any ideas of some kind of insulation you could put over that.
Well, fiberglass won't melt.
You can get fiberglass tubes?
You can wrap it.
Just take and buy some insulation, wrap it.
Wrap it, and then you can use tape over that to protect it.
Sounds good. Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, sure.
What is the thinnest that I could pour concrete over an existing slab? If I clean the existing slab up just to level everything out?
Well, is this a patio slab, a driveway slab, or what?
Well, actually, it's inside of a machine shed, and there's a bunch of different slabs poured in there, and I'd like to level everything out to the highest slab.
I certainly wouldn't try to go for less than 2 inches.
2 inches.
Okay. Thicker is better. A lot depends on machine shed. If you've got heavy tractors and so on, that may be cutting it pretty thin.
Okay.
But otherwise, I would say that would be the minimum.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. Let's go back here and have somebody on the campus. Line number 2. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for the show.
Sure. Yeah.
Hank, may have not done this yet. I haven't been online all the time. North side of the house, particularly clapboard siding, like growing algae, and I need to repaint, and just wondering what your best advice is on oil-based, water-based selection, and, removing this material off of this old, I'm assuming it's pine, and getting a good primer set, to repaint this house.
Well, basically, you need to wash it, probably with a solution of one part of household chlorine bleach to 4 parts of water, and that will kill it off. Whether you need to prime or not depends upon the condition of the paint once it's washed.
Right. Well, it's going to go down to bare wood, I'm sure. I mean, the stuff is flaking, you know. It's one of these typical old houses. So.
Okay. Now, when you go back to bare wood, before you prime bare wood, touch sand it first.
Okay.
I usually just one of these little hand sanders I take up on the scaffold with me and do a fast pass. What we're trying to do is take the surface layer of cells off the wood because they have deteriorated due to sunlight.
Okay.
And once we're back, and we're talking maybe a thousandth of an inch off of these things, we're not doing any significant sanding. But the new paint will then stick to the newly exposed cells. It would stick to the old ones, too, but the old ones don't necessarily hang on.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is get back to a good solid surface, get a paint. And today I would use water base.
You would use water base. Okay.
Yes.
Now, how about you know, if the areas are big, power washing and then a quick sand? I'm afraid of getting a lot of moisture trapped up underneath the lap, though. I don't know.
It depends. If you aim it up against the joint, yes, you're going to get some water up there. Power washing helps and does a nice job, but you would want to keep your jet perpendicular to the surface, not so you blow back in.
Yeah, I was thinking if I can rent a lift or something like that, I could just kind of make a downward motion, you know, and try to kick it so that the stuff all falls away from the house.
Yeah.
And then I have one of these sanders, you know, that take the belt. It's like a hand variety. So if I just kind of hit really quickly with a medium grade, that should give me the sanding action that
It certainly should.
Yeah.
As I said, they're heavier than the little palm sanders that I usually use, but that would be fine.
Yeah, and you don't think there's any merit in going oil-based? I mean, the stuff is just so sticky, I kind of want to use it, you know?
No.
Okay, so water-based. Who makes the best paint for the exterior of a house? Because I have been disappointed a couple of times.
Well, most any of your standard brands do well. You don't want to buy the cheapest one on the market. We've had pretty good luck with Sherwin-Williams.
Right, yeah, I use their shop on North Cunningham quite a bit. So, All right, thank you very much.
All right, very good. We've got about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on this program once a month, always on a Monday, the third Monday, in the 10 o'clock hour, and we talk about home maintenance. And he's been doing this for a long time with us, and he's been doing this for a long time. So he knows a lot about the various parts of the house and how things go together and where some of the problems are. And if you have a problem, something needs to be fixed, you're just not quite sure how to go about it, you can call in here and talk with him, and he'll give you the benefit of his experience. 333-9455, that's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's see, we'll go next to Champaign and line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature seems to want to make the north and west walls of our house and garage green with vines. Does this cause any harm, or should we be diligent in pulling those down?
I would keep them pulled down. If you don't keep them down, you'll never get them off. The little suckers that they stick on with are great. NASA tried to duplicate them for adhesive and was never able to come close. And they do tend to pry the siding off the building. So vine-covered cottages are great in poetry and literature, but they're terrible for the house.
Our house has got a brick addition with the main part stuccoed. Does that cause harm there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Okay. I'd spray the vines with Roundup or something like that, and that usually kills them off, and then you may be able to pull them off.
All right, thank you very much.
Next caller is in DuPage County. This is line number four, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not my question, but I just happened, the guy with that machine shed with the sunken floors, there are companies that will drill holes and pump mud underneath there. They call it a mud.
Mud jacking, yes.
Yes, you know, that might work better maybe than trying to pour cement over to level them up. I don't know. But.
Depending on what the situation is, mud jacking does work. We oftentimes use it for re-leveling patios, sidewalks, things like this.
Right, driveways. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
My question, if I remember correctly, quite some time in the past, you said something about copper sulfate in your septic system to kill tree roots. Is that correct? Or?
That's right.
Now, how much would I put in?
Oh, about a pound every 4 to 6 months.
Okay. And you just kind of flush the toilet and just kind of like sprinkle it into the toilet? Is that how you get it in there?
Right.
Okay. So 1 pound every 4 to 6 months then?
That will usually keep the roots out pretty nicely.
Because I noticed last winter that on some, I can usually tell where my field is at because the snow melts off the top of the ground. And I noticed that a couple of my lines that run close to trees, the snow did not melt last year. So I have a feeling that, you know,
yeah,
there's a problem created there. So.
Right. And it will tend to kill the roots that are in there.
But it will not hurt the trees.
No.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you very much for your time.
All right, thanks for the call. We have a couple of other people here. Let's a couple of champagne callers. They're next in line, so we'll go to line number two. Hello. Line two, champagne.
Yes, hello.
Yes, go ahead.
What is the treatment for, is there a treatment for retainer wall cement block? It looks like stone, you know, so that it won't... come apart in the freezing rain?
Well, there are a number of water repellent treatments that are available from the concrete companies. You don't want a waterproof treatment. What you want is a water repellent treatment, because waterproofing tends to keep the water in, and then it freezes and pops the surface. So, Hydrozo or something like this.
Excuse me?
I think one brand is Hydrozo.
Hydrozo.
But the ready mix companies or the companies that sell brick and concrete block have these water repellent treatments that you can use that allow the wall to breathe and still keeps water from soaking in.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And another champagne person here. This is line number three. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Good afternoon or morning. My name is Sean Lampkins. I'm calling in reference to a question I have about water and also air for the home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting a baby, my wife and I. And I was wondering, because I'd heard a disturbing rumor about the quality of water here in Champaign, is there a particular type of filtration system that I need to get for the whole house? My desire is to have fresh water for the baby in terms of bathing and also for drinking. And then my second question is in relationship to the air in the house. I know that my fiance has allergies. I don't want the child to have, to be susceptible to allergies as well, or have them also. And so I'm just curious to know, is there a particular type of filtration system that you might recommend, or if that's even necessary, if you think? I don't know.
Well, it all depends on what she's allergic to.
Okay. I know that my fiance is allergic to your basic pollen in the air, like a high pollen count kind of thing.
Right. The electronic air filters do the best job.
Mm-hmm.
They are the most expensive, but they will take out particles down to smoke.
Okay.
And that's about as good as you can do. As far as water is concerned, I think Champaign-Urbana's water is some of the best in the state. Sorry, I don't worry about that. If you have a specific problem, there are some units, generally speaking, an under-sink unit that uses a reverse osmosis process. And, again, it's the next thing to distilled water.
Okay. And in terms of the electronic filters, is that like something that I can use for the entire house, or do I need to get those for particular rooms?
Generally speaking, I would use it for the entire house. It replaces the regular filter on your furnace.
Okay. Okay. And is there any particular brand that you might recommend that's maybe high quality?
No, I don't necessarily think that one is significantly better than the other. They're all using the same principle.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the call. I guess also the thing that you need to keep in mind is that these kind of filters may, assuming that you have forced air, they may require some modification of the ductwork because you can't just slide them in like with the other filters.
They're about 6 inches thick, so they don't fit where a one-inch filter was. It's going to take some modification of the ductwork to do it.
So that is one issue, but indeed they will take out much more than the slide-in kind of filters, even the expensive slide-in kind of filters.
That's right. That's right. They will take out down to smoke, and you don't get much finer particles than that.
Yeah, okay.
And the same way the reverse osmosis water treatment, I know a number of people that use them for drinking water. They are usually capable of only producing 2 or 3 gallon a day. I wouldn't say it would be available for bathing, but I don't know of any problems with the water that we have that would be a problem for bathing a baby.
All right. Next is Danville, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to clarify for my own information what you'd said about painting the shingles. Are those just for wood shingles, or is
yes.
that for asphalt as well?
Wood.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Near DeKalb, the next caller here, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
If you were building a average-sized new house and you wanted true air conditioning controlling both temperature and humidity, what system would you use?
Well, basically, you might use a multi-stage cooling system so that a humidistat would control what was happening. Basically, sizing of the unit has more to do with it than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
In order to control humidity, the unit has to be cooling. So if you get one that cools the house quickly and it shuts off, the humidity will bounce right back.
I understand, but sometimes in the spring or the fall, it's humid and not really hot, and yet you don't really want to cool. And
Then you run a dehumidifier.
Okay, but you wouldn't include it in the ductwork as such?
You could, but again, as I say, this has to do the multi-stage unit, the variable speed compressors and so on, do as good a job as you can with that kind of a unit, but probably dehumidification with a dehumidifier under those circumstances is probably what you're going to have to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Bloomington, Illinois, line number four. Hello.
Yes, just on a health note, if you are using distilled water for your child, they might want to be sure and add trace minerals and possibly fluoride as the child gets a little older.
Well, as I say, I'm not convinced that the water in Champagne Urbana as it comes out of our treatment system presents any problems.
Yeah, I would think for bathing there wouldn't be any deal at all.
Yeah, well, it's anyway.
Right. And certainly there is some fluoridation. I was raised on fluoride water more than you were supposed to have. That's why I have white spots in my teeth, because of the over fluoridation that came out of the well. But yes, certainly the rest of these things are all important, and I think that the water treatment system that we have here is about as good as you're going to get.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. And I think actually it's not just you that thinks that. I kind of think even the folks at the Illinois State Water Survey have said that they think that the quality of water in Champaign-Urbana is very good.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't see all these people selling bottled water in the grocery stores when we have some of the best water in the state here. Why are we paying $11 a gallon for it in the grocery store?
Yeah, if you really want to put some water in a bottle, get a bottle and fill it from the tap.
Exactly.
and take it with you.
Exactly.
We're almost at the point here we're out of time. Any last sort of thing that you might like to leave with folks before we go?
Well, no, I think this time of year, everybody's got their air conditioning system up and running. You might want to check the filter, because it's probably run enough now that your filter may be somewhat crudded up, but this is one of the low-maintenance times of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If you are planning on a new furnace, this might be the time to get a good price on it, because they're not too busy installing those right now.
If you're painting, you're doing exterior painting, or maybe for that matter, if you're doing interior painting, but particularly I'm thinking of the outside, if you're doing this at times when the humidity is high, does that affect the drying time of the paint?
It will increase the drying time. It doesn't affect the durability of it, but certainly, the drying time will change, and with water-based paints, As the humidity goes up, they definitely dry slower.
Yeah. Can that be a significant difference? I mean, if you're up really, the humidity is really up about as high as it'll go. How much difference does that make between in drying time, between that and when it's, you know?
It will add hours to it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Beyond that, it's not. It eventually dries, and it's not a major problem.
Yeah. So I know one of the things that we've talked about is that it will not be an issue at this time of year, but that you want to make sure that if you're doing outside painting, that the temperature stays above a certain level. You don't want it to. You don't want to paint when it's going to be cold outside.
Right. Right. Preferably the. It's better if the temperature stays above 50. Certainly, we can work with it down to 40. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I hate to paint at lower temperatures.
Yeah, I guess they do make special paints. If you live in Alaska, they make special kind of paints for you to use under those kinds of
conditions. They do, but certainly I wouldn't suggest using them here.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess at that, we'll say thank you very much.
Oh,
for being
you're
here.
Very welcome.
We appreciate
Always
it.
Always good to be here.
Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on this program once a month, the third Monday, and we take these kind of questions on home maintenance.